All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I am your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I am joined by none other than Matt Harmon of NFL.com. Today he is going to talk with us about Calvin Ridley, the Falcons' top pick in the 2018 NFL Draft.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, founder of FalcFans.com, one of the longest-running Falcon websites on the internet, also on Twitter, at FalcFans, and, of course, the host of this Locked On Falcons podcast. I have with me none other than Matt Harmon, a pro-Cam Newton sort of guy, but we won't hold that against him, by getting him to come on this podcast to talk about Calvin Ridley, a player that he sort of pegged as the Falcon is a good fit in Atlanta. And we'll get his thoughts on sort of what he saw when he was breaking down Calvin Ridley this offseason. So welcome to the show, Matt.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Aaron. You know, you and I feel like we follow each other for several years, and I've been on Falcons podcasts with you in the past. And it's funny the evolution that this team has kind of gone under. And, you know, we were talking before we started recording about the defense and everything, and I think a lot of people expected them to go defensive front seven, defensive line. I like what they're building on defense, but I thought that the reason that I, because you mentioned I had this kind of pegged as a good landing spot for Ridley, our social media team had a few graphics built out and asked us, like, our best, especially this fantasy social media team had built these graphics for, like, what are the best landing spots for these players to produce in. And I thought this is a great spot for Ridley just because of the team fit. And I think it's mostly because of trying to get back to that offensive prowess that they saw in 2016.
Yeah, one of the things we've talked about on this podcast over the last couple of days since the Ridley selection is the expectation that the Falcons, at least early on in the future, certainly Ridley's role will grow, but the expectation is that Ridley will sort of fill the void in the Falcons offense that many people thought Taylor Gabriel would wind up filling a year ago, but he certainly wasn't as productive to the level that I think expectations were coming off of that really strong 2016 season. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that Ridley and Gabriel are pretty different. Both can make big explosive plays downfield. Ridley especially, you know, I know he didn't test well at the combine, but when you look at him as an on-field playmaker, he's definitely a guy that can get vertical, especially on corners and posts and everything like that. Those routes where he has to make a sharp cut, you know, towards the sideline or towards the middle of the field, he definitely creates good separation on those patterns in the vertical game. And I think so he'll help as a big play receiver in that regard. But I think what makes this such an intriguing selection is the way Ridley is a full field route runner. And I mean, he was frequently praised as one of the best route runners in the class. I thought he and Deshaun Hamilton were kind of 1-2 in that regard. But Ridley, obviously, just a guy that gets open, you know, no matter what. I love the way he gets open against man coverage in reception perception history, which if your listeners aren't familiar is a methodology where I go in and chart every route that they run over a sample of games and mark how often they get open on each route, what type of route they run. His success rate versus zone coverage, 91.1%, is actually the highest I have over the last 3 years worth of draft prospects. So that is definitely the strength of his game, is the ability to get open regardless of the coverage, regardless of the route. And I think that's what this Falcons offense is really was missing last year. I don't think they had as many, you know, maybe that's more offensive design, but I also thought that there just was kind of a lack of another playmaker there. They have Julio Jones as kind of the center of the universe guy in the passing game, but the, like, a consistent number two who can separate, because I like Mohamed Sanu's game, but he's not necessarily that player, especially as an outside receiver. I love Calvin Ridley's fit in that regard.
Yeah, I think that's been the topic of much debate and discussion, certainly on this podcast over the last several months, given sort of the differences between sort of Steve Sarkisian's offense and Kyle Shanahan's offense, where it seemed like Kyle Shanahan was able to fit lesser pieces, not to disparage any of the Falcons receivers, but certainly compared to Julio Jones, they certainly would be qualified as lesser pieces, but sort of fit guys like Sanu and Gabriel and Justin Hardy and Aljack Robinson together and sort of use those guys to sort of complement each other, because you're probably right in the sense that they're not necessarily all of those guys are running a full route tree, but combined they sort of fit into one sort of perfect player. And it was one of the reasons why even in games in 2016 when the Falcons didn't get a whole lot of production out of Julio Jones, those guys were able to compensate in a lot of ways. And I think one of the things that was missing from the offense last year under Sarkisian is you didn't really have that in getting each guy to sort of be the maximum version of the player that they are. And I think they sort of more were reliant on sort of individual guys to have to step up and be the guy. And I don't think that's really the strengths of guys like Gabriel and Sanu. And I think with a guy like Ridley, I think you do have a player that can sort of be that all-in-one player, and it will certainly should at least certainly make things easier for Steve Sarkisian as he tries to develop and hone and adjust his play calling to what the Falcons are trying to do.
I think you hit that on the head. I've talked about this quote on several podcasts I've been on, but Kyle Shanahan made a comment right after free agency where the 49ers didn't really attack the wide receiver position. He talked about not really needing a number one receiver like a Julio Jones. You know, that's great to have. If you have it, you should keep it. It's an incredible luxury, but you can get by with lesser talents at the position when you're able to identify their roles really well and be like, hey, you don't do everything well, but you do the underneath routes really well, or you're really good after the catch, or you're really great from the slot being able to work with the two-way release. Like, being able to identify those roles and then just finding players that fit in that rather than trying to fit them into multiple roles or positions, then you really can field a receiver core of quote-unquote lesser talents, or at least more limited talents in terms of the spectrum of what they can do, as opposed to chasing a bunch of high-end players. It looks like the Falcons are definitely going away from that with this selection of Ridley. But I do think it makes a lot of sense, too. It kind of harkens back to the days of when they had Julio Jones and Roddy White. You know, Julio Jones is the freak show athlete that is a separator because of how athletic he is and just an overwhelming physical specimen and can, you know, just get away from players on slants or posts and everything like that. But Ridley is much more of like that Roddy White sort of technician, you know, the guy that can separate because he's a good route runner and everything like that. And I think reception perception kind of shows that to be true.
Well, we got more to talk about with Calvin Ridley and his fit in Atlanta, but I do want to plug the Locked On NFL Draft podcast with hosts John Legert and Trevor Sikkema, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So, Matt, we talk about sort of the strength of Calvin Ridley's game, but there are some question marks, and I think it was one of the reasons why at a certain point in the offseason he was sort of pegged as this potential top 15 pick, clearly the number one wide receiver in this draft class, then sort of coming out of the combine with some of the poor testing, and then it sort of compounded on some other issues that teams had. You hear people talk about the age. You hear the jumps and whatnot that didn't test particularly well. That's not necessarily high on my radar, and nor is the age really a huge, huge question mark for me. But some of the things watching his play, you know, there were a high number of drops. I don't think that's as big an issue. I think a lot of that is on the quarterback and other issues, and even still, I don't think drops are a massive, massive deal there. But the one area that did concern me a little bit is sort of the play strength, and you saw that at times in terms of his ability to defeat press. I think he did a really good job with using his quickness to defeat press, but when corners were able to get their hands on him, he did struggle a little bit there. And certainly at the NFL level, the quality of press and jamming is going to be much better than it is at the college level. Were those some of the same issues that you saw when you were charting him, and were there other areas of concern for you in terms of his projection at the next level?
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head once again with the play strength issue. You know, he's a guy that's, I believe, weighed in sub 190 pounds at the combine, despite being, you know, not necessarily a real short receiver. So he's definitely thin. He's definitely, you know, I wouldn't say he's lanky, but he's got a thinner build. So I think that does show up in his reception perception results. You know, he had a 67.4% success rate versus press, which isn't bad. It's just slightly right around the average. So, you know, there are receivers that are much better at getting off the line than him. I do think that that's an issue that shows up there. Also, you mentioned the quarterback play. And, you know, a lot of what I'm trying to do with the route running metrics, you know, the success rate versus coverage, you know, breaking down each individual route, is kind of trying to isolate the receiver from the quarterback play, which in this class is really helpful because there were a lot of receivers that played with some really poor quarterbacks, even guys like DJ Moore and Christian Kirk. had to play with like multiple bad quarterbacks. So I think it's important in that regard. But one area where I did think Ridley suffered in reception perception with his quarterback play was his contested catch rate. You know, he only had a 25% contested catch conversion rate, which is really poor. That's the lowest I have over the last three draft classes, but he only had 5 contested catch attempts. So you can say it's depth. I would not say that it's a strength in his game, but I also don't know that it's a weakness because of how infrequently we got to see it, because, you know, only 5 attempts over the sampled games is a really low amount. And I do think that's just because he had a quarterback that's not willing to, you know, rifle it into tight windows or be aggressive with the football or, you know, be able to trust himself with his accuracy to get it there. So those are two areas I think that you could say are probably not strengths of Ridley's game in terms of getting off the line of scrimmage against press and, you know, winning at the catch point with bodies around you. But that's why those two weaknesses are why I really like pegging Ridley to the Falcons from the beginning, because I don't think he'll have to be that type of player for them. You know, if he had gone to a team, you know, where he was going to be asked to be the number one receiver, I think that would have been a struggle for Ridley, because I just don't think he's that type of player. But I think he's a really high end number two receiver. And I think Atlanta, you know, just with how they deploy their weapons, it can use him in that regard. You know, in 3 wide receiver sets, he could potentially move into the slot, you know, 50-50 with Mohamed Sanu. In 2 wide receiver sets, he can operate as the flanker, which means he's going to be off the line of scrimmage and be able to get a little bit more of a free release. You know, I don't think these two are comparable players, but in the way that they're deployed, I think it could be similar. I was just charting Stephon Diggs before we got on the podcast, and I've been noting how often they will line him up behind, you know, not right on the line of scrimmage, and get him a bit more of a free release. And those guys are kind of built similarly, Ridley and Stephon Diggs. And I think, you know, maybe they deploy him a bit more as that flanker, with obviously having a top split end X receiver and Julio Jones already there.
Yes, I agree there. And I think one of the reasons I did notice the thing with the contested catches, and I do think one of the reasons why he didn't have a ton of those is because he's so good at separating that he doesn't necessarily need to have to win some of those 50-50 balls and whatnot in those tight windows. And he's very good at opening those windows because of his ability to separate. I am curious sort of to get your thoughts on drops, because I've heard you in the past talk about drops aren't as big a deal when it comes to evaluating wide receivers and projecting to the NFL. Or am I misrepresenting something that you've said in the past?
Yeah, no, you're right. I think that my big thing with drops is that we tend to overstate their importance because of negativity bias. I wrote a piece on thebackyardbanter.com, my personal website, about this, and kind of related it to a few psychological and social theories on the matter. And I think it's because as human beings, we tend to weigh negative events more than positive events. And especially when you're watching your team and if one of the players drops the ball, or, you know, it's like somebody on your fantasy team or something, you have like a very negative visceral reaction when you see that. But what you don't see, and this is another part of the equation, is you know, we get to see when the wide receiver gets the targets on the broadcast angle, but you don't necessarily get to see, you know, the 30 plus routes they run a game where they could be creating consistent separation and, you know, being good targets for the quarterback. Like, you know, there's a lot of guys that have drop issues. And really another thing with drops is that year over year, the only thing that they correlate with is the amount of targets you get. So, you know, inherently, if you drop, you drop more passes if you get thrown at more. So that's when it's important to put it into a rate stat and everything like that. But I would say that my thing with drops is, like, I don't think it can be a standalone negative point in an evaluation, because to me it's more about, you know, tell me what the player can do on the vast majority of their routes, as opposed to this one or two balls they might drop a game. And again, I know fans have a tough time reckoning with that, because again, that it is that negative visceral reaction, you know, God forbid, especially if they drop like a deep touchdown or something. But nevertheless, I mean, we see it happen all the time with high end players. And to me, again, it's just more about tell me what they do to make their drops worth living with. You know, people always bring up these examples like a Troy Williamson or like a Greg Little. It's like, well, those guys, you know, they drop the ball, that's why they're out of the league. It's like, well, no, those guys couldn't play. You know, they couldn't do anything else to make that worth living with. Whereas where guys like, you know, Ted Ginn or Brandon Marshall, guys that definitely have drop issues. I mean, two ends of the spectrum there, but focus on the Ted Ginn example. Like, guy that drops passes, you know, here and there all the time, but he's still in the league and helping good offenses over the last several years in Carolina and New Orleans. Now he's still helping those teams because he brings something else to the equation. So with a player like Ridley, who definitely has his issues dropping the football or winning at the catch point here and there, I think the separation that he provides and the consistent ability to be a reliable target on the vast majority of his routes really outweighs any drops you might see.
Okay. I really appreciate that, Matt, because I've been arguing with people for months about the whole drop issue with Atlanta in particular last year. So I'm glad that someone else in the world sort of feels similarly to what I do about that whole drop issue. But I do want to get you out on this one. Sort of, were there any in the course of the last several months, sort of looking at some of the next gen stats that I know you do quite a bit on NFL.com and NFL Network, were there any sort of stats that involved the Falcons that sort of jumped out to you over the last several months that you would like to share with the listeners?
Yeah, I would, from what I can talk about, about the things that are coming up, there's going to be a really interesting quarterback metric that we're going to be putting out that I kind of tease that I think will be fascinating to look at with a player like Matt Ryan. But one I did want to highlight was just the play of Deion Jones and the Falcons defense in general. They're one of the fastest defenses out there. You know, we do measure play speed, which is a little tough to get, from just like a highlight perspective. I think there's a lot of noise in it, but the Falcons are one of the faster teams in the NFL. And I think that they're kind of building a very futuristic defense in terms of, where the league is going, not where the league has been. And I think that was an important thing in this draft, more so than ever. Like, there are so many critiques that were handed out to prospects that I felt were more ingrained, in the past. Like, this is the way we evaluated football players, 10, 5, even 5 years ago. I mean, the league feels very different 5 years ago than it does right now. And I think the Falcons have identified players like Deion Jones who, might have gotten passed up because of his size, but he's somebody that, we measure running back yards gained after close, where the defender gets within 1 yard of them. Like, how much do they create after that? I think it's one of the best metrics evaluating running back elusiveness because you don't just get yards after contact, which can be a little, what is contact, what is not. Mm-hmm. You could also say, what about all the moves where a defender doesn't make contact, but they still gain yardage after they get close to them? And I think that's what this metric is really powerful for. You can talk about that from the Falcons' perspective, but I think the defensive perspective in that regard with a player like Deion Jones, he was one of the running backs who limited, he's one of the linebackers that limited extra yardage gained by running backs after he got within 1 yard of running back. So that, I think, really shows you just sideline to sideline ability of a player like that and the way they can kind of, as the game goes more horizontal, I think that's what makes a player like that so special. So that's one note I would say, that he was one of the best linebackers in that regard. And I think that was so indicative to like why a guy like Roquan Smith went top 10, because I think he's similar in that regard. Off-ball linebackers are real fascinating position. And I'm a little rambling about off-ball linebackers now, but like, they're a fascinating position in terms of where their evaluation is going in the future as opposed to where it has been in the past, because I think you see players like Deion Jones really be that player who is kind of the gold standard of what you should look at for the position now.
Yeah, and I'll certainly put myself out there where I was not particularly high on the Deion Jones selection at the time, because I was one of those people that was sort of stuck in the past about, well, you have to be able to get off blocks and you have to be able to deal with this, and it's a physical game to play a linebacker position. And really sort of watching the Falcons over the last several years has really opened my eyes to a changing sort of reality when it comes to the NFL, with speed being king. And you sort of see that still a little bit with like Shaquem Griffin, and I think some of the criticisms of his potential and his projection to the next level, where I think a lot of it was sort of focused on, the hand and how physical could he be. But I do think he sort of fits into that mold of a player, and him, whether you consider him falling to round five as a fall, but I do think he's a little bit undervalued in that regard. So I do think you're right that this is going to be the new vogue, and you see it with certain players like a Roquan Smith, but other players I think still tend to get a little bit undervalued for various reasons. So it'll be interesting to sort of see when NFL teams catch up. And I think certainly with the Falcons case, to be able to be, you know, slightly ahead of the curve in that regard certainly gives them a competitive advantage, because they're able to sort of, you know, I think there's always a bonus or a benefit to being the innovative team as opposed to the team that, you know, as this league is often called, a copycat league. If you're the team reacting to the innovation, it's always a bonus to be the innovator as opposed to the reactor.
Yeah, I would totally agree. And I think the Falcons have been kind of ahead of the curve in that with defensively. You know, it always hasn't borne out in terms of statistics and everything, but I think that is an improving unit. And again, so much of what they do in the front seven, I think, is really indicative of where the league is going, not where it has been.
So, Matt, let the people know where they can find you on Twitter, as well as your work elsewhere at NFL.com and more.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at @MattHarmon_BYB. Unfortunately, still rocking that underscore. It's like a bad tattoo that I just can't get removed. but you can find all my reception perception work, including Calvin Ridley's full write-up, at receptionperception.com. And you can purchase the Ultimate Draft Kit there, where you'll get access to over 50 NFL players' data. You know, you'll be able to tell who beats man coverage the best, you know, who fits into different type of roles. I think that's what's really, the tool is really good for. So you can check that there. And at NFL.com/Harmon, you can find up all of my next-gen stats, write-ups, and everything like that.
All right, Matt, I appreciate you coming on. I look forward to talking with you later this season. I'm sure I'm trying to think of a controversial wide receiver that we might have, probably Mohamed Sanu, probably. I'm a little lower on Mohamed Sanu than you are, but I'm sure we will get into some arguments and some debates and discussions about some of these wide receivers as the year progresses. So I look forward to those.
Sounds good. Thanks so much for having me.
All right, man. Appreciate it.
All right, man. Thanks much. All right. See you.
Later. All right, guys, there you have it. Calvin Ridley, the first of probably multiple discussions of Calvin Ridley over the next several months. And I think, you know, looking at his ability, yeah, it'll be interesting. I think there's a lot of comparisons you can make with Calvin Ridley. You know, I do think sort of his game, you know, I've made the comparison in the past to Harry Douglas. I think a Marvin Harrison is another comparison that you make. I think sort of on that spectrum of sort of undersized receivers, in terms of what they can be, Nelson Aguilar is another, I think, a good comp for Calvin Ridley as well. So guys that are more, you know, finesse receivers, I guess you could label them as. I don't mean that in sort of the negative sense that it often is used, but like that type of receiver, I think, is where Calvin Ridley, he's somewhere on that spectrum, somewhere between a Harry Douglas, who was a competent to good number three receiver in the NFL at various points in his career, to Marvin Harrison, who was, you know, of course, a Hall of Fame caliber receiver. And, you know, you hope that Ridley's going to be on the upper end of that spectrum, certainly, as opposed to the lower end of that spectrum. And certainly Aguilar is probably somewhere in the middle as well. So I think the future is bright with Calvin Ridley. I think tomorrow I will give you guys a complete and thorough sort of my breakdown of Calvin Ridley from watching the film I've seen. I'm pretty good on that in terms of what I've seen from him. And we've talked about some of those things in the last couple of episodes as well as today. And that will be on deck for tomorrow. And then we'll keep things going. I will certainly get other people's insights on this draft class in the coming days and weeks, as well as continuing to look at each individual prospect. And certainly as news comes with the Falcons in terms of what they do with their roster, we do sort of expect them to make some additional moves. But, you know, the Falcons, as they often are known to do, they zig when you think they're going to zag. And, you know, we'll see what becomes of that, where it's like you're sitting here thinking like, okay, they're going to address a couple of maybe these rosters, the D-tackle position, maybe potentially bring in a fullback, maybe bring back some of these free agents that they sort of let walk after at the beginning of free agency, you know, some of these D-tackles or maybe a running back or a receiver or whoever it is. To sort of bolster competition in camp, as opposed to be relying on so many undrafted rookies to sort of fill some of these spots. But of course, the Falcons, when you think they're going to do something one way, they often do it another way. So we'll see how that develops over the next couple of weeks. Until then, if you guys want to get your feedback in for future episodes, is what you want to do over this summer time, where we have a lot of time to spend, but a lot of podcasts to fill that time. You can do so for me at Twitter at FalcFans. If it's podcast related, just go ahead and include that in the tweet and indicate so in the tweet. If it is podcast related, just easier to go ahead and send it over to Locked On Falcons. That's the show's Twitter handle. Of course, you can find us on Facebook at Locked On Falcons. Give us a like while you're there. If you prefer to contact us via email, lockedonfalcons@mail.com is the email address. And of course, you can leave a comment at lockedonfalcons.com as well as falfans.com, where the show is posted daily. And yeah, guys, get in those fan talk requests if you want to be on the fan talk between now and July. I know I got a couple of emails the other day. I haven't quite answered those quite yet, but I will get to those certainly this week, if not today, as I'm recording this on Tuesday. So look forward to that. But if you other guys want to get in, and gals, I shouldn't say guys. When I say guys, I'm assuming, you know, both genders. Certainly, if you want to talk, chat, whatever. Yeah, that's it, guys. Tomorrow we'll have more on Calvin Ridley, sort of my personal opinion on him and sort of my personal evaluation on him. And then we'll have more to add in the coming days and weeks as well on Ridley and the rest of the draft.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.